outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Wayne, I am very confused right now.
Yeah?
Well, when you and I talked the last time we recorded, there was this assumption that I was going to be seeing, you know, concrete, maybe some light fixtures that weren't actually installed, some wire hanging out of the wall. And
really?
I see this really swanky digs behind you. What happened?
Oh, it's a photograph. It's a green screen.
Okay. That makes so much more sense.
Now, this is the new office studio. I'm calling it a studio, writing studio, even though we do some recording in here too, but. Last room in the house finished, first room settled. So this is actually the master bedroom's in pretty good shape. And this room and the guest room actually got finished yesterday. So we're moving along. It's like we're living in a construction zone. So no telling what noise. There's a jackhammer in the middle of my house as we speak. So it's not moving it's not operating at the moment. I asked him to please be quiet for a little bit, give us a chance to record. So I don't know what could happen here. I've got 15 people and stuff being delivered. We are in the middle of all this stuff still going on that we had hoped would be completed by now. But we're at least in the house and we're at least getting settled. And Sarah couldn't be happier.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you sent me a picture of your new kitchen and honestly, I was speechless. I was like, man, that is an artisan's kitchen right there.
Yeah, don't be talking about what we're not showing yet. But yeah, people okay. go, what, the kitchen? Yeah, the kitchen is spectacular. Yeah, so is my outdoor kitchen where I get the barbecue at.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, we've really downsized into a 40-year-old home, upsized from the apartment, however. So we upsized from there. We've downsized significantly from our old home. And then we've just done a lot of cosmetic stuff to make this place our forever home, we hope. We hope maybe we die here or at least go to retirement village from here or something. But who knows? Who knows if God doesn't have something else for us? But this studio is about half the size of the closet we used to have.
Okay.
And it's about a third the size of the old office I used to have in my in my home. Yeah. So this is really small, but makes a great writing studio. Out this way here, I've got a window that looks out into Hawaii, which is what Sarah is calling this section of the yard, which will be very tropical. Wow. And then up through the trees, I can see trees in the distance. It's kind of like a cave of trees. I look up. It's spectacular.
Hmm.
And then I've got stuff on the shelves behind me. And then I've got my Abba picture over here, which is a picture of me holding a painting that a lady did of me holding my first granddaughter when she was, looks like about 15 months old. And it's my Abba. It reminds me of the Abba place we have with Father. So, yeah, I'm set in here. I'm really excited. There's still a lot going on out there and a lot that needs us, our attention almost every day. But the end is in sight. You know, a little over a year ago, came home and find my way back to Sarah. That was the mission.
Yeah.
Founding our way back to her was, oh my gosh, we've got a whole lot to heal inside this woman who's got memories now unfolding from a childhood she doesn't remember. And then we've been building this home. I've been preparing a place for Sarah to live. And I see that. It's we're almost done. And then I don't have anything past that. I don't. I have books I want to write. I have some things I want to do, but I don't see beyond that. I don't know. We don't know if travel comes back into it other than some RV trip we're planning this fall to hit some people in the Southwest, but we don't know what it involves. And I had three tasks that kind of unfold. I didn't know they were coming. So the task was to find Sarah. The task was to walk with Sarah through the darkness into the light. And then it's now to prepare a place for her. And so we've done those things. And there's a really neat sense of I've completed the task God's given us to do. I've completed it. And now what's beyond that, I don't know. But I sense some things stirring in my heart. So it'll be interesting to see where we go from here.
Do you notice any kind of difference in the stirring as you've gone through the very dynamic, there's so many words that come to mind when I think about the last 18 months that you and Sarah have been navigating. But do you find it, as you've kind of had these three tasks that have come to a close, And now there's kind of this wide open horizon that's waiting for you in the future. Do you find some of those nudges or promptings coming in different ways, or are they in very similar ways like they were before?
Yeah, it's very similar, but I'm not thinking a whole lot about technique here. I'm just thinking the way God just oozes his reality into my life through what I'm reading, people I'm talking to, walks in the woods, to moments of just prayer and reflection and reading. That's still going on. So same way, maybe different modality, same modality, but
okay.
Man, I'm really stirred by just the freshness of what God seems to be inviting me into next, though I'm not ready to talk about it because I don't have a clue how it's going to unfold.
Yeah.
Still got a little bit to do here. Probably till the end of June, we'll be pretty much settling and moving. We've got only our apartment stuff here. We've got four storage units, but we don't have access to our garage yet. So try moving when you don't have access to a garage, because that's been a trip. Because stuff you would have just stuffed in the garage and unpacked later, yeah, you couldn't do it.
Not a thing.
Yeah, because they were finishing up in the garage. It's now finished, but they had to redo part of the floor. So we've got a few days for it to cure. And then we'll be able to settle in the garage, which is also the laundry room. So. Yeah.
All right. So we might see some diversified outfits or attire from you that we may not have seen in a while.
Oh, the laundry. Yeah. No, I've got too many clothes, honestly. We live 2 weeks at a time in the RV just with the clothes we took in the RV. So, yeah, I've got plenty. You won't see a whole lot rerun, I don't think. Maybe. Who knows? Anyway, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
From Michigan today.
From Michigan. My wife and I and our two girls, we had an opportunity to come out and spend some time with Jess's mom. She wanted a weekend with the girls. And so Jess and I have been trying to do a couple night getaway for a long time by ourselves, just the two of us. And so we decided to come out. We dropped off the girls with Jess's mom. And really it was kind of this interesting thing. Like, we decided, okay, do we want to do like a super relaxing, you know, kind of a getaway, quiet, no cell service, beautiful location? Or do we want to do more of an adventure? And Jess and I kind of let Jess choose which direction she wanted to go and kind of what she was thinking. And she went for the adventure. And so we actually flew out to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and spent some time with some dear friends out there and went on a few adventures together and just did some wild, crazy things that we haven't been able to do together since we were, you know, in Los Angeles and didn't have any kids and, you know, had kind of the double income, no kids lifestyle going on.
Wow. So you did the Taylor Swift concert in Philly, huh?
No, we did not rock T Swift. Not that I've seen her live and she is absolutely incredible. So that's not a dogging on T Swift, but no, we did a few other things other than that, but
okay. I had a niece that was at the Taylor Swift concert in Philly. So
really,
we just got the lowdown on it a week or so ago. And
oh, nice. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, so I'm here in Chelsea, Michigan. I'm actually in this beautiful library in Chelsea, the actual town proper. Jess's mom lives just a bit out of town. And so it's been really fun to get to watch Jess's mom, who, you know, she lives a plane flight away. And so to be able to see her, get to interact with the girls and get to spend some time has been just a real joy. And so, So I snuck away for about an hour, hour and a half to record a podcast. And then I've got some work that I'm doing in Ohio with some community and just really exploring what does it look like to bring the God-shaped life into business culture?
Cool.
And how do you navigate that? And what does that look like? Especially when some of the techniques or the strategies that are coming to the hearts of the people that are setting the culture may not necessarily align with traditional strategies to build the pocketbook. And so just really unpacking that and saying, okay, what does that look like and how do we move forward?
Good. Maybe a beautiful library, but that wall's pretty plain behind you.
It's very plain. I've got a gorgeous view out in front of me, okay. But it was blinding you. So
it was. You opened the window and I went with you in silhouette. I could not see anything other than this black shape. So nice to have you back.
Oh, it's good to be back.
All righty. So best thing you heard this week.
I got surprised actually on my flight back just last night. I got surprised by a quote from the new John Wick movie. I don't know if you're into those series, but
we have watched a couple of them.
I'm a big fan of John Wick, and I'm a bigger fan just of
Should we talk about Keanu violence Reeves. Today and that being in the heart of the child of God? Is anything you need to process there?
Yeah, we probably should not go into the whole redemptive violence conversation.
Redemptive violence. That's kind of like excruciatingly beautiful.
Yes,
only not in a good way.
Not a little more on the yucky side.
Redemptive violence. Oh my gosh.
There was a conversation between John Wick and one of the main other lead characters, and John Wick was apologizing to him for some of the stuff that he was bringing into this individual's life and some of the risk and the chances that this individual was taking for John Wick. And his friend's response was, friendship means little when it's convenient.
Ooh. Ouch.
Yeah. That, like, I was like, ooh, like, oh, okay. Like that connected to me so deeply because I feel like it's easy to call somebody a friend or to walk with someone when it's convenient, when it's simple, when it's not pulling you outside of your comfort zone. But man, it's very revealing when you're navigating dark or challenging seasons to see the people that step into that with you and say, friendship means little when it's convenient.
Boy, it's the friends that walk with you through the dark stuff, the hard stuff, that are willing to be there just because they care about you, not because they love what you're going through or love holding your hand through it. And I think it's not much there if it's just a matter, when it's convenient for me, I'll be around. And when it's not convenient, good, God bless you. Yeah, make it on your own.
And I think it goes both ways, right? Because it's also the people that are willing to ask for help. Because that, I think that's another big piece that I see with a lot of the clients I work with, the community that I work with, and we're going to get into this, I think, a little bit later, but the vulnerability and the courage to ask for help and say, no, I need to walk through this with someone. I don't want to do this alone. I want to do this in community. I need those people alongside of me that can hold me up. That takes a whole nother level of vulnerability as well.
To
position yourself in that space.
Especially when you risk the other side of that. Because when the first dark days of finding out that Sarah was gone when I got home, I've got some friends around here. And one good friend, I asked him about if we'd go out to dinner. I shared with him what had happened to me. And I said, you know, I'm really going to need some people locally to lean on. And he was, I'm sorry, I can't do it. I was like, okay. And he's called me numerous times. Wayne is my closest friend. He said that. But he didn't have whatever emotional capacity. And he was honest about it. It wasn't a rejection of me personally. It was just, I can't. And I gave him that freedom. No harm, no foul. You know, I get it. I'm not sure I can walk through this. So I can understand someone else looking down this little dark hole and saying, I'm not sure I can get out of there if I go down there where you are. But the people that have... Yeah, you just appreciate so much people that are willing to walk in the darkness with you, hold your hand, and everybody needs that. And surprisingly, as we hear a lot about Sarah's need, especially saying, I wish my husband would have walked down my dark road with me, or I wish my wife would have, that, you know, some spouses just, I can't go down that dark hole. I can't and don't. So that is tough.
What about you? Best thing you heard this week?
Well, it's personal. It's not going to be richly rewarded. It's just one of those love kisses from God, if that's what it is. I don't know. The prayer group that I gather with, and we pray about things in the world, I've talked loosely about them here.
Yeah.
We met last week. And remember the story I told last time we were together? I told the story about looking most of a Friday morning to find an olive tree to put in the atrium in our house, which is why the jackhammer is here today, to blast the ground.
I was wondering.
To plant the olive tree in the middle of the house. And after that time, a great time of prayer and sharing, then a lady who's part of that sent out a song that had been on her heart from our time together. And so I was listening to the song and watching the lyrics roll by on YouTube. And this was one of the lyrics. I'm an olive tree that's growing green inside your house. And I'm thinking, okay, now, because the song's called Generous Mercy by Jill Phillips. It's a really tender song, but that lyric jumped. We just spent all day to find olive tree growing green inside our house. Not here yet. And I went, God, is this you? Is this you just Because moving here, well, all the other places we could have moved, and the word God put on my heart as we were traveling here was the word oasis.
Yeah.
And we move in here, and I'd be going, I don't know the oasis part. I mean, the home does look like a bit of an oasis, but then to see the video after I moved into the house that had video in the tag, and then this was another thing, it just kind of one of those ways of God saying, this is exactly where I have you. And I turned to the scripture, actually Psalm 52:8 says, but I am like an olive tree flourishing in the house of God. I trust in God's unfailing love forever and ever. And I assume that's where the lyric came from. And we will soon have a green, it's a black olive tree, even though it's not an olive tree. it is called that, and it will be green, and it will be growing in the middle of my house. And I'll walk under it every day and shower. Mm. There's a window from our shower that goes right into the atrium where the tree will be. So I can shower under the tree. Sarah and I can, it's right near the dining room table. We can eat under the tree. I just felt like it was such, I mean, I teared up when I saw the lyric. My eyes went, what? This came a day. I didn't share anything about the olive tree with the people I prayed with. That never came up. So she didn't send the song out for that reason, but it was there. Wow. And I just went, wow, that's special.
Well, and to be bluntly honest, I don't know very many people who have olive trees growing in the middle of their house, especially in Southern California, maybe in the Mediterranean, but not in Southern California.
No, for sure. And I try to think in the what would it mean in scripture that there's a green olive tree growing in the house of the Lord, which would be the temple. There was no trees in the temple.
No.
So I just talking about something life-giving where it's not supposed to be, evidently, but thriving there. And so I told Sarah, we got to make sure this tree lives, man. We got to water it, feed it. We got to do whatever it takes. Got to make that tree live, thrive in our house. And I'll never see it without thinking of the scripture, I'm sure. So that was really tender. It was really sweet. Touched my heart. In so many ways, because I tell you what, I don't know many people that get a chance to have a completely second marriage with the same woman. And it's like everything is new. Moving from an apartment, it's like buying our first home. What does Sarah want here? What do I want here? What's going to be comfortable? What do we not want in our lives anymore? Because we cut down our square footage by more than half. So there's lots of stuff to. You want to be my friend right now? You just want to be near me, saying, "What don't you need, Wayne?" Because we're just getting rid of stuff and giving it away if we can. And Sarah, the freshness and spontaneity of that life with all she's been through, and getting to know her in a different way, but yet a familiar way. It's really weird. It's like starting all over with the person you know best in all the world, and everything's open, free, and new. And I guess when Jesus said he would make all things new, this is maybe a little bit about what eternity will feel like. There's the familiarity of I've known him, and yet it's going to be all new. I'm going to be new. My perception is going to be new. I think we're getting a little taste of that. And then we were reading yesterday, Sarah and I were reading 1 Corinthians 15, where Paul talks about the seed that's planted. And then he's talking about the resurrection. What a seed is in its plant before it's planted is what we are here in this life. And then when it will one day be planted and raised into something spectacularly different. We will be spectacularly different. And so I was reading that, thinking about all the newness going on in my life right now. A life couldn't be better. I mean, I'd love to get all the construction people out of my life at the moment. but even then, we ended up with one of them shared something in my kitchen the other day while we were working on some stuff. And I turned around and said, yeah, I don't believe that. And they were talking about God and, you know, they were cheated in business by a friend. A relative, actually, and then said something about, well, it's God's will, obviously. And I said, no, not obviously. And then for half an hour, we're sitting in the kitchen in the middle of construction stuff going, talking about sovereignty, allowing God's will. Does it always happen? Does the enemy thwart stuff? And man, she came back 3 days later going, you know, I have not stopped thinking about that conversation sitting in your kitchen. And so even with some of the construction people around here, it's good. It's so good when all things become new. It's made my heart hope in a different way for what I always consider. I mean, we're getting up there in years. So we're looking now, we're getting at the front of the line for the Space Mountain ride, finally. And it just makes me even more excited. What will that day look like after in the resurrection of all things, when this corruptible takes on incorruptibility, and this mortal takes on immortality? I just, my heart's overwhelmed with joy.
I think about the thin spaces that I've experienced in my life, whether it be in conversations with others, or times when I've been out in the mountains or in the wild, or times with my wife or watching my girls play. And I think about it, and I'm like, man, again, if this is how good this is in this world, in this age, with who I am right now, I can't even fathom getting to experience it when, like, for example, all my entire family are playing together, and they're all in the fullness of the expression of who God created them to be, without reservation or hindrance or fear. Like, oh my gosh, like, what? Like, I mean, because it's those moments that's like, if I could slow down time and just enjoy this space, I would, or capture it somehow, you know? And you think about that, to be able to dwell in such a space without even the concept of time, and being able to just enjoy that level of rich community and connection and expression in the world.
This is quite a flip for you, Kyle, because a few weeks ago you're talking about, I don't know what it would like to be living without fear, and not even sure you're ready for what eternity might mean. This is quite a little
flip. I still completely agree with that. Like, that still went through my head. Like, again, that thought went through my head.
Oh, man, I thought we had redemption at work. Was it violent redemption or redemptive violence or whatever? Redemptive violence.
Again, I think that's the beauty of that, the tension of those thoughts, of, like, just the awe and the excitement and the anticipation for that. But then also the, man, that's going to be so disorienting. You know, like, especially to go from, and I don't know how that's going to work. You know, I don't know if I'm going to remember what it was like in when I wasn't, you know, completely redeemed and immortal. I don't know if I'm going to remember what it was like before that.
Right.
Or, you know, like, I don't know. Because if I don't, then it's not a big deal. But if I do, I'm like, oof, man, that's going to be a big deal.
I guess where I have a hard time wrapping my head around that is, fear has never been my friend.
Yeah,
it's never been.
Absolutely.
But Lisa wrote me this. She said, I completely understand Kyle's fear of letting go of fear. Fear has been our protector. It made us hypervigilant, able to read a room, able to predict what we might be dealing with in any given circumstance. Fear keeps us more in control if we can get a jump on what might happen. There's a child in there whose coping mechanism became fear, and fear is doing its job. It's keeping me safe. I'm finding it helpful to think of the fear as something that loved me, albeit not in a helpful way anymore, but it wants to protect me. It wants to protect that little girl, because I didn't know how to protect her even when I grew up, even after I grew up. Now that I'm standing up as a God-loved woman, learning my triggers, being curious about them with the Father, I'm starting to protect that little damaged girl in there so she doesn't have to let fear do it. I'm promising to be there for her, to not betray her anymore. I'm being a parent to myself. Isn't that a beautiful expression?
It really is. I love the idea that fear was, you know, an expression of love towards self, but maybe not necessarily a healthy one or a wholehearted one. And I don't even know if I'm necessarily afraid of letting go of fear. I just know that subconsciously, God is still working out his salvation in my life. And I know that there's a lot of areas that I'm not even aware of, that his love is currently touching and molding and drawing into the God-shaped life, alluring into the God-shaped life.
I noticed you've switched that to alluring. I noticed that. I was thinking
that. And yet, like, I think that's the piece for me, is it's this, Father, I know that that work is still being lived out in my life. And I'm aware of things in my life that is still being worked out in. And to be in a space where that work is complete, that I don't even know where to begin with that thought.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid of it, but I don't even know where to begin with that thought.
Yeah.
Other than those thin space moments where I feel like my life has been very close to, there hasn't been a lot separating my reality and kingdom reality. Mm. And those spaces, they just get me so excited about what is what is to come, and the work that he's still doing right now, because he's still winning my heart into that right now. It doesn't stop. It isn't just, it's just not just pushed off to something in the future.
So. Yeah. This is what she continued to write. She said, I've always been told my fear is either demonic at root, a spirit of fear, or a character fault, fear of man. Somewhere in my gut, I knew that wasn't right, but I had no argument, and they had all the power through the scriptures twisted to fit. So I pled with God, went forward at any service, spending hours on my face, trying to get delivered of something being made worse by the very things I'm taught would heal me. I went through deliverance ministries of all stripes. Jesus had my back, gently propelling me up and out of this madness, even though no one else has. And he's teaching me how to have my own back, how to protect those lost parts of myself that need my attention. And I would rather come to a place of deep trust and peace. So in the event my death isn't something peaceful or beautiful, I will be at rest with him anyway. The peace and the beauty are inside where they can't be touched.
Come on, sister. That's so good.
I've known Lisa for maybe 10 years now. Lives back east. Met her on various trips, corresponded with her some. The arc of this journey that is expressed in this paragraph is unbelievable. From the fear inside, trying to be delivered, cast out, all the fake stuff Christianity does to deal with fear, instead of bringing her to a place where Jesus takes the fear and the beauty are in him. And doesn't matter what life hurls at you, in the end, the peace and beauty are inside where they can't be touched. It's magnificent.
And yet we're currently living in a world that is in desperate need of that peace, of that rest, of that transformation. And yet they don't have community with Father, and they don't have community with others to make that happen. You know, we were looking at that CNN article, and it was talking about how the Surgeon General putting out a report on loneliness and its impact on the world and its impact on others. And I mean, as somebody who's working in the field, you know, it's talking about research and how it's been showing that loneliness and isolation are linked to sleep problems, immune system changes, pain, insomnia, depression, anxiety, shorter lifespan, heart disease, stroke, diabetes, addiction, suicidality, self-harm, and dementia. You know, just to name a few.
All the good things in life. Wow.
Yeah, just a real basket of joy. And I just think about, I was sitting with a good friend this last weekend, and we were talking a lot about just community and the state of this world. And I just made the comment that if people knew how to do relationship and people had good relationship in their life, good community, good friendship in their life, my work outlook would drastically decrease. Mm. And I think the research backs that. When you look at loneliness, when you look at social isolation, and the impact emotionally, physiologically, and spiritually, man. And I feel like Jesus modeled that, and scripture models that so well. It points to that so clearly that we can't lone ranger this stuff. We can't go out and do it on our own and walk it out on our own and think we are just these perfect islands or silos out in the middle of the world that are completely self-sustaining. Really?
Yeah. Article you're referring to, the U.S. Surgeon, this is only a couple of weeks ago, put out a report, an advisory on our epic of isolation and loneliness. And it said that our epidemic of loneliness and isolation has been an underappreciated public health crisis that has harmed its individual and societal health. The physical effects of loneliness can be equal to smoking 15 cigarettes a day.
Cool.
That's unbelievable. That really caught my eye. Just say, okay, they've targeted this. It's an issue.
Yep.
It's kind of like the old days of, you know, cigarette smoking's bad for you. That was something the Surgeon General, that's the first time I knew we had a Surgeon General back in the day when it can be addictive and destructive. What? I have no idea what you're talking about. And then it says that this one I thought was really interesting. From 2003 to 2020, social isolation has increased by 24 hours per month that somebody's less with people. And that has a lot to do with the pandemic, people now working from home, people not engaged with people. Obviously, social media has done a big part of separating people from physical contact. says companionship time, 14 hours less per month. Social time with friends, 20 hours less per month. And social activities with others down 10 hours from just 20 years ago. That's been the nature of the change in how our society functions. And it says that, and then had this thing in the report was interesting. I don't even know what this means. You probably do in your fancy master's degree or whatever. One standard deviation increase in social connectedness was associated with a 21% reduction in murders and a 20% reduction in motor vehicle thefts.
One standard deviation?
One standard deviation increase in social connectedness.
Wow.
Isn't that freaky?
That's not much either.
No.
You know, like in research, that is not a large increment. I mean, I won't nerd out on the science of that, but that is not a large increment of shift.
And this talk about the lack of that in community. I think about that in the quote unquote, I know I don't use church this way generally, but our religious institution I grew up in, it was a lot of connected. We partied together, potlucked together, all kinds of your key friends were part of your faith community, right? They were part of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the whole idea of the mega church, and it got to be more, less of even connected. You sit there and we call it fellowship, and you may say hi and talk about the weather going in and out. But the number of people who have the kind of friend who will walk you through the darkness, and having two or three of those, and you don't have to have 200 of those. Two or three will be amazing. Even one, if that's all you have. But a connected friend that you touch base with two or three times a week is there in the darkness for you. Is there when, and you're there for them. You're there when it hurts for them. That's what our society lacks. And to be honest, I think our religious institutions are not part of the fix there. They're part of the problem. No. They've become less social connected. And when they do socially connect, poor Lisa here, where they're trying to cast out demons out of your fear instead of help you come to know Jesus in a way that transforms your fear into peace and beauty, then you see that, well, actually, we're part of the problem. What people really crave is the kind of friend that will just be there for them. And I was thinking about this as I've read this report and been processing over the last couple of days. My first thought is really, the damage that's done when we withhold affection from people. And yet, isn't that the first weapon used in manipulative relationships? If you don't do something I like, or you say something that offends me, what do? I give you the cold shoulder. I distance myself relationally. And hopefully, I think the point is, if I'm distancing myself, you'll come chase me down.
Yeah.
But the fact is, we are withholding affection. One of the deepest needs humans have for connectedness, when I willingly withhold it from someone, even as an act of punishment or revenge or whatever, I'm being as destructive as I could be. And then the other side of that would simply be this. Whenever I extend my affection, my connectedness, invite someone to my home, go to somebody for lunch, whenever I extend friendship, I'm offering the best gift this life can offer. In the world I live in, to offer that to a construction worker at my house, to offer that to somebody I walk past on the street. We end up with two pretty good friends just on dog walks where we used to live by our apartment. Now we're going, oh my gosh, we got to figure out another way to be with those people because our life doesn't, we don't walk past them every day and catch up and go out to lunch. But now we say, yeah, there's people we met that we didn't, and they're people that don't have a lot of relational connections in their life. And so that was important to them. And so, man, I came away with this, man, that's the best gift I get to give somebody. Just the gift of connectedness and care and loving. And the worst thing I can do is withdraw that from someone. Now, it doesn't mean I take responsibility for everybody I know, everything they're going through. I don't deal with relationships that way. Yeah. But the intentional withholding of affection. Just, I don't want to walk where you're going. I don't want to be part of your life anymore. And I've had relationships like that too, that to me, you have a disagreement or you have a way of misunderstanding something. Why wouldn't you talk and do the repair and save the relationship? And I do find in our culture today, most people are just willing to chuck it. You don't do what I want, you're out.
Yes.
I'm not going to negotiate through this to find where our friendship went awry and how we can heal it again.
I think about the idea, I talked about it on a podcast probably a couple of months ago, about the idea of emotional or psychological resiliency mm-hmm. and increasing that, or like psychological fitness, mental fitness, and increasing that resiliency that we have. And I think about relationships, and especially the relational culture for the young people that I'm working with right now. And the idea of relational resiliency, I mean, in their minds, I would venture to guess when they think about emotional or relational resilience, they're thinking, if this lasts a semester, maybe one academic year, this is like a really deep friendship that, you know, that longer, that's significantly longer than the average. Mm. And you think about that, that's 9 months.
Yep.
That's 180 days. I mean, I don't think you can create relational resilience in 180 days. You can start a foundation, but man, there's got to be some miles that are walked alongside of one another, both in the good times, the downtime, the neutral time, mm-hmm. and in the highs. Like, there's just got to be some life lived and some battles fought and some disagreements had and repairs made.
Yeah, over time. I think the resiliency part of that's really true. I think one of the things Sarah and I have talked about, there's no other place in our life since college where your proximity to people is so every day, all the time, where relationships grow more in 6 months of college than when you get in the work world, family world. You may pass somebody yes. once or twice a week. You know, that's really yes. different than we're in the dorm together. Or we're going down to dinner at the commons together. College is yeah. a great place for relationships to expand. It just is.
Yes.
And high school probably is too, if they're healthy relationships. But yeah. so I think, and I tell people, when you get away from that, it's harder in our workaday world, responsibilities, yards to work. You know, people don't make a lot of time or relational interconnectedness. It's hard to grow new friendships, and they take a longer time to grow than if you are around each other, because proximity is really the essence of it.
Yes.
But you're talking about resiliency, which is the other side, which is not just, this is great because we're having fun together, but this also, when something breaks down and I've said something that's offended you or done something you even misinterpreted, I didn't mean it, but you perceived it in a way different. If you can't sit down and talk about it, and process it and work it through, that's where relationships really, really deepen. That resiliency of, yes, I know I was hurt by that. Thank you for owning it or whatever. And then you're working through to go, the relationship's worth saving. It's not worth chucking. They're too valuable. They're too hard to find. And I was with someone recently, we were talking about how lonely they were. And I just asked them, I said, anybody you really miss? And they said, yeah, you know, when I left this church, I had a friend there, been a friend a long time, left the church. And, you know, he's never called me, never done this, never done that. And just, you know, on different pages. Yeah. And I said, why don't you give him a call? Why don't you offer him lunch? Offer to buy him lunch. And they said, why? I said, I think yeah. you'll find out the friendship's still there. Because I've gone back to people that you think left you, hurt you, or just weren't interested. Because, you know, we didn't go to religious institutions that when somebody was missing, you called them and pursued the friendship. It was, you may have called the man and feel guilty for not being in service, but you certainly didn't go, well, if you're not here anymore, I'm going to still find you in the world. And yeah. I've done that with a lot of people. And I would really say, if someone's on your heart that you miss as a friend, just call them up and say, hey, I've missed you. Could we get together for coffee or lunch or something? And you'll find yeah. most of those, that's one good way to connect, not just go and start a whole new, how do I start a whole new friendship with somebody and look like a, you know, I want to be your best friend and somebody you just met on the street. Not a good move. But find, God wants you to be connected with people who can hold your heart, who can love you, and you can love them, care about them. And proximity is the main thing that makes that happen. If you're not with yes. people, relationships will not grow. And now many of us who are not with people every week in the same service, you've got to do a little bit more initiative to find the relationships and to make room for relationships in your heart so you'll have them there as a part of your connectedness in the world. And just realize people around you need it. People in your neighborhood, people at work. Look at the loneliest person where you travel, where you go to work or whatever, and go, what would it change about their life if I've pursued a relationship with them? Because my biggest regrets, I think when I look back at my childhood and my college, high school life, the awkward people that wanted to be your friend, you gave the brush off to because it would lower your status having friendship there. And I've shared a couple of those on past podcasts. Those are the ones I regret the most. I regret not extending friendship because then it was more about, I don't know, status and reputation. It wasn't about loving the lost. And you can understand much more why Jesus was much focused on the people that are marginalized, the people that are left out. And one of the things we talked about with that generous compassion was finding people who are left out and being aware that there's somebody here that's a little lonely. And our friendship, Sarah and my friendship with them, could make all the difference in their lives. Like you just said, they may not need a mental health professional if they had a good friend. This whole study really challenges that thought in my heart. And I know I get lots of email from people who've really been lonely since they've kind of on a different spiritual journey and got closer to Jesus, but further from friendships. And they want to know, where can I find that group, a house church, or, you know, find something. And they're usually looking for a group. And I just say, no, find people. Just ask Jesus who is around you that God wants you to care for, and then look for two or three times a week to intersect with them. And it doesn't only have to be a meeting. You don't have to sit around and stare at each other. You could just go get something to drink or go to a movie together. Just have the proximity that allows stuff to happen.
And I think one of the big barriers that I often hear in that is, well, you know, we don't agree on everything, or we're not like-minded, or I don't know what their stance is on this. And it's like, oh my gosh, just go and be with humanity. Be curious, discover. And it could be the person, like you said, it could be the people that you meet through walking your dog. It could be the people that you meet at pickleball. It could be like, I went and sat down and had dinner with some friends after playing a volleyball tournament with them. And I've known them for quite a while, but this is the first time I've gotten to sit down with this couple and just talk about life. And we closed down the brewery that we were at.
That's great.
Just talking and having conversation because there was just so much going on in their life and their heart. And it's like, man, they needed somebody to connect with.
Yep.
And, you know, I think, man, allow your idea of the type of person that you quote unquote need to connect with. Allow that box to get completely shattered.
Yeah.
And you will be very surprised by the incredibly powerful, valuable, and amazing people that start showing up in your life.
Yeah. Our mutual friend, Teresa Moscardo, gave a thing about being intentional about making friends. And she had five things that she quickly shared in a video, and I'll try to link it here if I can find it. But these are great. Number one, accept that discomfort is part of the process of making friends. If you're only going to stay in your comfort zone, you're not going to make good friends. Discomfort, just putting yourself out there. Maybe not everybody wants to be your friend. It's okay. Find those that do. Two, you have to be willing to make an effort. Engage, be curious, ask questions. This is what you just said. Invite, be specific, follow up, call. Just stay in touch. Third, overcome negative self-talk and fears. Overcome that. Because you're going to have the, oh, it didn't like me. I didn't do this right. Now, all the self-talk's usually wrong. You're going to make assumptions that are usually not helpful. Fourth thing, find people who like what you love. Do what you love alongside other people. So a great place to make friends is join a club or go to an activity. If you like volleyball, if you like, you know, service club, find a way to volunteer. And you be, again, proximity is key. And then finally, I love this one. If you miss this one, you miss friendships. Friendships are built on vulnerability, not perfection. Relational glue. You don't have to be afraid of burdening someone. Focus on how to create reciprocity in the relationship, empathy, emotional attunement, and be kind. I love that. I love that it's not perfection. It's vulnerability. You let people in on what you're really, when it's appropriate. You don't let them on your deepest deal on the first time you meet them, but you find the rhythm of a friendship and the depth that it'll go to, and you don't have to be perfect. You can struggle and let them in. Oh man, we've blown it again, way over the time. But...
and you've been able to stave off the jackhammers so far. I haven't heard any crazy destruction or demo going on behind you, but
I hear a lot, but they haven't turned on the power tools. So I need to go let them turn on the power tools now and say, I'm good.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.